Well, Marina Island whānau, I'm John McLeese, and the talk this morning, it was originally meant to be part of the sermon series we were having on hard topics. So sort of think of it as sort of being a kind of a part of that wider theme. And so obviously, when you're going to talk about a hard topic, you look for a bit of wisdom and guidance from the older and wiser members of the congregation. So I sat and had a quick chat with Andrew Tisch about this, and Andrew sort of reminded me that he's been part of the Island congregation for sort of some 3 decades or so, and in that time he's only ever done 2 sermons. And his second sermon, he started off saying, "Today I want to talk to you about my lifelong struggles with lust," and he's never done a third sermon. So I found this quite attractive as a proposition for a hard topic series. But upon reflection, have decided to instead stick to my guns and talk to you about housing. So a little more prosaic, not quite as interesting, but still a hard topic. And the other sort of couple of reflections I've had in Ireland over the last few years is that if you are a speaker and you haven't done too many sermons, you need to wear a flowery shirt, so I've done that. And you also need to have a bit of classical art to illustrate the point. So today's picture is Brugal the Elder. This is the battle between Carnival and Lent, and we've all been there. But what I thought he captured really well was as a planner, the sort of medium density mixed use pedestrian friendly neighbourhood that we all love. There's a farmers market, doubtless within walking distance of an organic community garden. So I think it sort of captures sort of the topic really well. Now, Brugal, he also did high-rise apartments, but because we're New Zealanders, we're not really up for that as a housing solution, so we'll stick with our low-rise mixed-use neighbourhood. So with any topic, you always bring your own kind of background and sort of preconceptions and understandings to the issue in hand. So my day job is as a town planner, so sort of help look at urban growth issues and sort of get consents for sort of multi-unit developments and rezone bits of farmland for housing. Plus Mel and I have got a couple of rental properties, so sort of that's sort of a little bit sort of where we're coming from, and I guess what informs my life experience. So I thought in looking at this topic, I'll just sort of spend just a few minutes just doing a quick housing market 101. So my understanding is actually what drives the housing market, and because there's a lot of noise on this topic, a lot of media articles, and it can all get a little bit confusing. So I'll just try and sort of set the scene a little bit. And then we'll have a look at, is there a Christian perspective on this? So, is it actually a topic that Christians should be engaging with or not? And if so, what might that look like? So in terms of what drives the housing market, it can seem like a big complex tangle, but actually it's relatively simple. And we'll flick through. Here is a graph. I often think Ireland, we don't have enough graphs. And on a Sunday morning, I like a good graph. This one's quite simple. So what drives the housing market? In my view, but also was reading a recent sort of report by Treasury who looked at the housing market in Hamilton, and this is what they found as well, is that interest rates drive 75% roughly of what affects prices. There's maybe another 20% is supply and demand, the old sort of, more people, more houses. And then the last 5% is everything else. And so there's a lot of noise out there around, a few years ago there were sort of foreigners with Asian sounding names, there's, rise of Airbnb, ghost houses was a thing a wee while ago, sort of people buying houses and then leaving them vacant. All that stuff, in my view, is 5%. So fundamentally, it's interest rates that drive house prices. And here's some numbers. Now, I know there's a few engineers here that probably don't mind a number or two. For most of us, numbers are a bit meh. But bear with, this is the only slide with numbers on it today, so I'll distill it, and it's actually not too scary. So the key, this slide, conceptually and sort of simplistically, is the Christchurch housing market over the last 40 years. So basically, I won't bother, but basically this column, every decade, average house prices in Christchurch have doubled, roughly. Average interest rates have halved, and what you pay in interest has stayed exactly the same. So what drives housing prices? People think it's how much does the house cost, because obviously cheaper house, you sort of pay less. But actually, it's what you're mortgage costs that drives housing. So fundamentally, because interest rates have been going down structurally over the last four decades, what you pay in your mortgage hasn't actually changed. And so that's fundamentally why house prices in New Zealand have been going up as they have been, and indeed have been going across the Western sort of world for similar reasons. And this is sort of illustrated, I guess, married to Mel, as you probably know. Mel, good Southland girl that she is, means that I spend more time in Gore than is probably advisable. And over the last 30 years, I've found that population in Gore hasn't really changed. Number of houses in Gore haven't really changed. The supply and demand in Gore hasn't changed. So you'd expect Gore house prices really should have just followed inflation and fundamentally shouldn't have changed yet. They follow the same pattern of sort of doubling every decade. And so if it's not supply and demand, what is it? And it's the cost of borrowing money has gone down. So because the cost of borrowing money is what drives housing, it means that it's the Reserve Bank that sets the interest rate. That's at arm's length from the government, so politicians can't fiddle where they shouldn't. But it also means that politicians, fundamentally, the levers that they can pull to change house prices are actually quite limited. It's really for that last 25% around supply and demand. And so the political response, in my view, is largely about branding, because politicians need to be seen to be doing something. So left-leaning governments tend to blame landlords, right-leaning governments tend to blame town planners, because who doesn't dislike a bit of red tape? So it means as a planner who owns a couple of rental properties, obviously can lead to a few sleepless nights. But fundamentally, the key message, I guess, is that the housing market, it's interest rates that drive it. There's limited things that we can do to influence that around the margins. The next little slide here is home ownership. So basically, the housing market in New Zealand, so 65% owner-occupied, 35% rentals. And this ratio fundamentally hasn't changed in New Zealand for the last 100 years. Back in the 1950s, same split. 1960s, same split. Through the 70s and 80s, it crept up to about 74, 75% home ownership. And since then, over the last sort of 30 years, it's drifted back to 65%. But fundamentally, the ratio hasn't changed. It's also exactly the same ratio in Australia, the UK, or the US. And this isn't actually that surprising when you think about it, because for a lot of people, they don't want to own a home. So it's, you know, it's students that are sort of flatting down to Dunedin, or you're shifting cities, you sort of for a year or two you just want to rent a house. So then we look at the how that sort of third of who is renting is split up, and it's basically sort of roughly sort of 20% are people who are rented by choice, so the, you know, students in Dunedin don't want to buy a house. There's 10% of people in the yellow there who are life is not going that well, and who need direct government support to secure sort of safe and enduring sort of housing. And then there's sort of 5% who are sort of the archetypal first-home buyer who are renting, but would actually ideally like to buy a house, but they just can't afford it. Most of the media commentary on this issue is on that 5%, whereas actually it's only a very small portion of the wider housing market. So that's kind of roughly sort of my take on how the housing market works in New Zealand, so some of these key terms. Look, and I hear you say, well, Jono, that's all well and good, but, you know, it's Sunday morning, we're at church, we're not at a TED talk, so what's the Christian perspective on this? And, look, that's a good question, Ilam. So in thinking about this, as a good NAV boy, I dug out my NIV study Bible as the only one true translation. And at the back of that, went a bit old school, it's got a concordance at the back. And so looked up homes, and homes, verses to do with homes, sort of fill up a page or two in the Bible. Coincidentally, I couldn't help but notice that homes sits right next to homosexuality. And there's only two verses on that. And so I couldn't help but reflect on the amount of angst and sermons that you hear over the years on one topic rather than the other. And I think often we get our, where we put the emphasis isn't quite right. It's also obviously as part of that sort of this hard topic sermon series. Obviously, we heard from sort of Peter and Helen recently on their thoughts on sort of gender identity. And it's always nice, isn't it, when your sermon sort of series aligns both thematically and alphabetically. So in terms of sort of a Christian message or a Christian sort of take on housing, look, for me, Christianity or faith in many ways boils down to the, so a few of those sort of key verses, doesn't it? It's sort of the you know, love justice, act mercifully, walk humbly with your God. You know, the golden rule, serve, you know, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind and all your strength. Love your neighbour as you love yourself. And also this one, everyone needs someone to love, something to do, somewhere to live, and something to hope for. Now, this wasn't actually Jesus, although I think it could have been. This was Norm Kirk, so Labour got Prime Minister back in the 70s. And I think Big Norm was onto something with this. I've often thought, in terms of the sort of the four foundational sort of building blocks that you need to live well or to have sort of well-being, you can often boil it down to these four things. And as Christians or as the church, we're really good on the someone to love. You know, love your neighbour as yourself. We're not bad on the something to do, especially if it is sort of missionally focused around sort of God's kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. We're also pretty good at something to hope for, both now and obviously sort of a future hope. And we're utterly silent on the somewhere to live, which I've always thought is kind of weird. If it is one of these four foundational blocks, why does the church have absolutely nothing to say in this space? Why is it such a hard topic? And so I reflected some more on sermons I've heard over the years to do with housing. And here's a little graph. This is sermons in Jono's life. So I reckon I've clocked up just north of 1,000 sermons over the years. That allows sort of, that funny time back in my 20s when I was doing some different stuff and a bit of OE where we weren't particularly tied in. So there's a little bit of give and take in here, but I reckon a little north of 1,000 sermons. The column on the right is sermons I've heard about housing, and you'll notice that it's got a zero value. Now, I'd acknowledge that there probably have been a few sermons over the years that have talked about poverty, and housing maybe implicitly forms part of that discussion, but quite a small part. It's also possible, I would acknowledge, that I may well have had a sermon about housing over the years, and it was just a bit boring, and I've forgotten it. Obviously, that scenario would have been before I came to Island, Helen. But because I've always kind of been into this, I don't think that's the case. I think it is actually 1,000-odd sermons have never heard a sermon on housing. Yet, one of the four foundations of sort of living well, which again is just a bit odd. So why is this? Why is it such a hard topic for Christians that we don't even see it as a topic that we should be engaging with? And I think, for me, you can boil it down to four vibes. And these, I'll call them the four vibes. These are things I've picked up sort of subconsciously, I think, over these 1,000 sermons. And they're not necessarily to do with housing. They're just stuff you kind of absorb over time in sort of middle-class churchy circles. And this is these four vibes, I think, are why we struggle to engage with this as a topic. And the first one is give to Caesar what is Caesar's. And conveniently, we had a talk about this just last week. And how it sort of often plays out is this view that there are Christian topics and things that Christians should rightly be concerned about, and there's stuff that we shouldn't be. That's not really anything to do with Christianity. It sort of happens sort of on the government side of things. And I think housing, because it's to do with wealth and because it's to do with politics, we kind of pop it on the government sort of Caesar column rather than in the God column. So that's one reason why we don't particularly engage with it. The second sort of vibe is the poor are always with you, sort of sensibility. So it's a really big topic. Us as Christians, we can't really fix it, so why bother engaging in the conversation in the first place? The third vibe is the sense that, you know, birds have nests, foxes have holes, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. And the story about the rich young ruler who lived a good life, came to Jesus, said, "Lord, you know, what more must I do to get to heaven?" And Jesus said, "Sell all you have, give it to the poor, and come and follow me." And these sort of two sort of themes there sort of, I think, give rise to a sense that Christians, if you want to achieve peak Christian, you probably shouldn't own a house. You should instead be out there doing missionary stuff somewhere third worldy. So as middle-class Christians that by and large do own houses, we kind of wrestle a little bit with sort of this nagging sense of guilt and this nagging sense that we're not, you know, should do better. But it also makes us really uncomfortable to think, well, should I really sell the house and, you know, how's that going to work? The kids are at school and it's just not very practical. So we kind of tend to sort of put it in the two-hour basket. And then the last vibe is one that that Margaret actually mentioned this morning, that the sense that sort of, you know, God feeds the sparrows of the field and, you know, clothes the flowers of the field, and the sense that God knows what you need before you even ask. So this is almost the flip side of the give to Caesar coin. So on the one hand, we say housing and housing, so access to housing, it's a government issue. But on the other side, we also say it's a God issue. It's with him, not us, and she'll be right. And so either way, we don't see it as something that the church should be particularly involved with or wrestling. I think as predominantly sort of middle-class Kiwis as well, we also struggle to engage with this topic, not so much because of biblical issues, but because of a couple of cultural things that are going on. And one is that you're kind of raised up as sort of middle-class Kiwis to sort of, you know, there are a couple of topics that polite people don't talk about in conversation. One of those is money, and one of those is politics. And housing, inextricably linked to wealth, and inextricably politicised as well as an issue. So we kind of tend to sort of shy away a little bit from talking about it for the sort of sense of, I think it's more of an upbringing thing than a particularly Christian thing. There's also, I think, as a church, we're a little bit nervous about engaging in conversations around money or wealth and politics, because there's this nagging suspicion that if you do, it'll all go a little bit prosperity doctrine and all sort of Voices for Freedom marches, and we don't really want to go there. So we kind of just don't go there at all. The other upbringing sort of thing, I think, is that, again, as predominantly middle-class Kiwis, we engage with access to housing in the abstract. You know, we're aware of housing poverty, we're aware of sort of emergency housing in my towns in Rotorua, but it doesn't directly affect us. It's a theoretical issue. So we engage with it as a theoretical exercise, rather than as a directly lived, pressing issue that needs resolution. And I think it's similar to, say, abortion, where how you approach the issue changes markedly from when it's in the abstract to when it's your sort of your sister or your daughter or a really close friend who's struggling with an unwanted pregnancy. And then all of a sudden, the issue has a human face, and you engage with it with a lot more urgency, and your take on it suddenly changes from being this abstract theory to a much more pressing, lived reality. But because our lives generally are with friends who also own their own home, where access to secure housing isn't a pressing, in-your-face issue, it's a theoretical problem, not a real problem. So it all gets a bit conflicted, and it's just easier, therefore, I think, not to engage with the issue, which is why we don't. So then it's sort of, well, what do you do with this then? This sort of conflicted sort of tangle of sort of ideas and sort of preconceptions that you sort of picked up over the years, and how do you actually, is there a Christian response to this or a Christian reaction to this? Bearing in mind, as I said at the start, that most of what drives the housing market is interest rates, which really we can't do much about. And I think, perhaps not surprisingly, and I think it actually gets relatively simple, is that the focus for Christians is really on those that bottom 10% of the community that really struggle to access safe and secure housing. And it's how do you do that? And again, that's sort of very much comes back to those basic sort of biblical propositions from Jesus, of sort of, you know, what you do for the least of these, you do for me. How do we respond to that housing need for that bottom 10%, which is quite different from how do we engage with it as a theoretical issue, or with our kids who've gone to university, got their professional job, and are struggling to sort of get into their first home, but they can certainly access secure, safe housing. They're not in a motel or living on the back of a van somewhere. And I think you can do that sort of through a couple of different ways. One is the direct provision of social housing, which is obviously challenging to do at an individual level. Obviously, if you do choose to invest in a couple of rental properties, it's thinking about whereabouts in the market they are. Are they high-end properties? Are they lower-end properties? Or you can engage directly with Christian-origined organisations who are directly looking at the provision of social housing, like Habitat for Humanity. At a collective issue, it's, I think, especially challenging for Ilam as a Baptist church. Baptist churches, from what I've sort of found out over the last few years, part of the sort of defining way that Baptists roll is that the church structure is very individualized isn't quite the right word, but each church can operate quite independently from each other. Quite a lot of flexibility with how each church does its thing. And there's some very real strengths with that. But it also makes it really challenging to act collectively on issues that almost do require a collective response. So Baptist Church New Zealand is the only major denomination that doesn't have an active social housing provision to it. The Methodist, Presbyterians, Anglicans, and our friends the Catholics all directly are involved in the provision of social housing and the provision of aged care housing for sort of for retirees that don't have a lot of money. So there's a particular tension there as Baptists for us in terms of actually getting directly involved with provision of affordable housing. So there's the provision, and then there's the advocacy, and advocating for that 10%. And I think that this happens at sort of three different levels. One is at an individual level, where I think actually we're generally quite good at supporting friends and family who are struggling to get into housing because they're your friends and your family. You know, you step in and you kind of help them sort of navigate through the process. It's just that as a middle-class congregation, we don't probably have that many friends and family that are really struggling to access safe and secure housing. So we would if we could, but it just doesn't come up. So that's where we're really encouraged to see part of the congregation looking at sponsoring refugees for next year. And certainly, absolutely guarantee that when that those families arrive, assuming that this happens, that the biggest challenge will be securing secure, affordable housing for them. It's that they're somewhere to live, and then it'll be finding them something to do, be it training or employment, hopefully making them feel part of a community so they have somewhere or someone to love, and the combination of those three things gives them something to hope for. So that's sort of advocacy at the individual level. We can also do advocacy for the 10% at a community level. So what comments do you make on your community Facebook page when Kāinga Ora is looking to put some new social housing around the corner? And Facebook's lighting up about all manner of reasons as to why social housing shouldn't go around the corner. And certainly, as a planner, I've been involved in quite a few social housing projects, have never come across a residents association that is okay with social housing going in nearby. Everyone agrees it's a good thing. It's just no one agrees that it should go near them for all manner of reasons that on the face of it don't have anything to do with social housing. It's just that the schools are full, the roads are busy. But you never see those reactions where it's high-end housing. So it's, do you comment on your Facebook page? You're not going to get many likes. It's perhaps not the greatest of forums for engaging in sort of nuanced and constructive dialogue. But how do you respond to social housing going in near you? And then lastly, there's advocacy at the governmental level. And the Salvation Army, I think, are particularly active in that space. And again, I find it kind of weird that Christian denominations are more than happy to rock up to select committees on legislation to do with access to abortion or homosexual law reform, completely absent from select committees around affordable housing by and large, or reform of the planning system. And it's just sort of weird. So to wrap up, obviously housing, in my view, integral to wellbeing, one of those sort of four key foundations. And so it is really, I think it's very much an issue that Christians should be engaged with. Absence from the space, I find really weird. So hopefully as you read articles and news items, think about housing and hopefully engage with it a little bit differently. And also for the youth here, hopefully when you guys are pushing 50, when you've clocked up 1,000 sermons, you'll at least have heard one on housing. Thanks. So that's me. Karen?
Thank you. That was great, especially the floral shirts.